Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Sam Grass in Atlanta, Georgia, and joining me today in the studio is Lee Cantor, our producer. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Sam. How are things?
I'm doing well. Brad is off socializing at a network meeting today, so he's got the day off.
He's the big winner.
Yeah, obviously. Always is. Always the boss man, always gets the cake job.
So what do we got today?
We got a great lineup today. Joining us in Atlanta, Georgia is Stephen Stockdale with Safe Insight, and Kevin Ritz in Dallas, Texas. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Sam. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Fantastic.
I'm going to turn it over to you, so introduce your guest and go for it.
All right. Thanks, Sam. Joining me today in Dallas, I have with me Taylor Settles with Home Care Providers of Texas. How are you doing this morning, Taylor?
I am great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Why don't you, I know you've been on before, but just to give our listeners a little bit of a refresher, why don't you kind of talk to us about, you know, where you're from and kind of the path that led you to home care providers?
Well, I've been in the business for about 11 years now, and the recent change to Home Care Providers of Texas, the reason it brought me there, my wife had worked there for about a year and a half. Loved it, and I started noticing a lot of the improvements and computer-based company that they are. It really showed me how they were handling the patients, taking good care of them, and shows by their census, which they have over 400 patients on census at this point. And it just, and they're a 9-year-old company, and they just seem to have their act together, Kevin.
Just through talking with you about home care providers, I know that their big push is to more of a paperless system. So what is healthcare providers doing to make communication between the patients, the nurses, and the doctors more efficient?
Well, pretty much we've got a system. When they refer to us one time, we can actually make up an ID and a password to where they can go into our computer base and see how that patient's doing throughout the whole process. Just by click a button and going in and seeing when we're actually seeing the patient, from nursing to occupational therapy to physical therapy. They'll have a pretty much a calendar that they can print off, a 9-week calendar that can will show them every detail that we're doing.
Have you found that the physicians in particular are excited about this, or are they somewhat reluctant to move to something a little bit more high-tech?
You know, I mean, you're going to have some of your old-fashioned physicians, but I think for the most part, most of the physicians nowadays, they understand that's where it's all going, is the computer age. And with the HIPAA guidelines and everything else that's going on, they feel like it's a necessity. I mean, and that's good for us. One of the owners of our company actually made our database, which is really nice because if a doctor sees where there may be something that would help him out, benefit his company, then he would be able to call us and we could probably implement it that same day.
What has the patient's reaction towards this technology been? Do they see the value in something like this?
Well, I mean, there's lots of times that a relative may call us and say, hey, what's going on with my mom or dad, whatever it may be, and we're able to pull everything up real quick, get them the information. We are actually about ready to implement a program for them as well to where they can go in and actually review what's going on with their family member.
That's great. What about if, you know, in our business, we provide non-medical care. Is it possible for, you know, if we were serving one of your patients, would it be possible for a third party to see that as well? So if we had questions about what was going on, would we be able to log in and take a look at that too?
Should be able to. I know with the HIPAA guidelines, it really doesn't interfere as long as it's your patient, our patient, the doctor's patient, facility patient. So it shouldn't be any issues or problems with that.
Yeah. And it sounds like with something like this, you could very easily implement a monitoring system into it as well. So, you know, there isn't a nurse or a caregiver present and they're living on their own, you could have something like that. Have you guys looked into anything like that?
You know, I mean, there's always like your telemonitors and different things like that. We haven't really gotten into that at this point, but, you know, that's something that we're always throwing around as new ideas and better ways to take care of that patient.
So what are some of the services you offer? Obviously, the skilled nursing, physical therapy, occupational therapy. Kind of walk us through what your areas of expertise are that you offer the patients.
Well, you know, the neat thing about us is we do have full-time staff, so we're not dealing with a lot of contracts. Not to say we won't use contract when we need to, because we got to care of that patient. But most of the time, we're using our own therapists, we're using our own nurses, and a lot of the things that we take care of, wound care is a big thing because we can go in, take pictures, put them up on the website, and that doctor can view every step of the way with that wound and what's taking place. Having our own therapist, too, helps out with a lot of your orthopedic doctors because communication, that's where the biggest breakdown is when you don't have your own therapist taking care of those patients. And us having our own, we're able to really communicate a lot better with your PT, OT, and speech therapy.
Yeah. So when it comes down to choosing a home health company, what are some of the things people need to look for when they're heading off from the hospital, the nurse hands on the list of four companies that to call? What should people look for in a home health company?
Well, they should look at longevity, how long the company's been around. They should do their background check as far as maybe going on Medicare.gov and just understanding the layout on they've got different percentages, national, state, and different averages on maybe getting better, walking to and from the bathroom, getting up and out of bed, and different things like that, to where you can actually view that and kind of get a feel for really that agency.
Yeah. So then once they choose one and they call you up and say, and the doctor writes the order and you're ready to go, what does the process look like for an admission to home health?
Well, the process is basically we would get the referral, we would sign it, and, of course, verify Medicare and different things like that. And then usually have somebody out within about 24 hours.
Okay. And is that first person that goes out within that 24-hour window, is that a nurse? Is it?
Most of the time it would be an RN that would go out. And the neat thing about us, we don't have LVNs. We actually operate strictly with RNs. An RN or a physical therapist would have to make that first assessment. That's just part of the rules of what Medicare hands down to us. And home health standards there. So, I mean, usually 24 hours, they would see a nurse or a physical therapist, but generally it would be an RN.
Okay. And then the RN puts together is it a care plan or?
It's a care plan. Basically, they fill out an OASIS is what they call it, and it's kind of a checklist going over everything that might be wrong with that patient, and then run it out. And that's how Medicare would actually pay as laid off of that care plan.
Okay. And I know this is going to vary case by case, but what are the guidelines for how long a person can have home health and what if, you know, because I think a lot of people sometimes panic, you know, I've only got physical therapy for 3 weeks or something like that. What are the general guidelines? People understand how long they're going to be able to continue on those services.
Well, one thing with home health is it's an intermittent service. So you're not, your goal is to get in there, fix the problem, and get out. But then sometimes there's different diagnoses that come about. They may be seeing them for CHF. Well, next thing you know, they're cut down with diabetes or different odds and ends like that. So it really varies on the physician and kind of what his care plan is for that patient. Because, I mean, really, we don't operate solely on us just going out and making decisions.
Yeah, I imagine that that's, you know, a great way to tie all that together with that high-tech sort of thing you do. Makes that communication that much more easy.
Yeah, it's really nice because a physician can actually send a referral over to us, too, on our website. So, I mean, literally, there's no paperwork whatsoever.
Yeah, very, very, very efficient.
Taylor, if you could give one piece of advice to somebody who's a senior citizen, somebody who's going to need home health coming out of a hospital or rehab, what would that advice be?
I would say do your homework. See what's out there. If you feel like you're going to need home health after you go into a hospital, some of you do, some of you don't, but I would definitely see what's out there before I went with exactly what the case managers are offering you.
All right. And if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
They can always reach me on my cell phone at 214-228-4098. Or they can call the office, which is 972-735-0821, or 24-hour nurse referral line at 214-435-2249. And we also have a website that they can go on to at www.hcpoftexas.com, and they can email me at tsettles@hcpoftexas.com.
All right, Taylor, I appreciate you taking the time to join us. And with that, we'll send it back to Sam in Atlanta.
We thank you, Kevin, and appreciate Taylor, you being our guest. Joining me today in the studios is Stephen Stockdale. Stephen is owner and founder and president of Safe and Sight, Atlanta-based company. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm doing real well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Interesting story that Stephen has about this company and how he came to be with it. So what I'm going to do, Stephen, is ask you to give us a little bit of background on yourself and then just tell us how you came to be with Safe and Sight.
Thank you, Sam. Well, it's kind of an eclectic background, but I was born in North Carolina, and a strategic thing after 10 years, my father decided to move to New Jersey. And for any Southern kid in New Jersey, that's a horrible thing. So I got chased around for about a year, and then we decided to move to Maryland. So Maryland is really what I consider home. But after high school, I joined the Coast Guard and served my country for 5 years. No Coast Guard jokes, please. And so my path in quickly when I was in Alaska, chip and paint, and it was rusting faster than I could sand it, I realized I should have gone to college. So I chose a land station, and I ended up in New Orleans. And by the way, happy Mardi Gras just passed. And but my track was really biology, and I wanted to be a medical student and eventually be a doctor. And so my majority of my schooling was in biology, cellular microbiology, but a minor in finance. And through the ranks of going to school at night, taking a very long time, I ended up with a marketing degree and a minor in finance. So I ended up being an accountant all throughout my professional career. And long story short, I ended up being an executive for an IT company. And that's what decided how I moved to Atlanta, Georgia. And after about a year, I decided to go on my own and own an IT company. So through about up until about maybe 2005, I was well known for integration technology, high technology. And then I decided enough with that, I'm going to join the ranks of real estate and decide that I'm never going to have to work again. So investment after investment, here I am working. And so what led me into Safe and Sight and the concept was purely happenstance. And I have some properties downtown Atlanta, and they kept getting broken into. And I said, you know, what a neat concept to be able to put a wireless camera outside of my house and catch the people, the bad people that are stealing my doors and my countertops, etc. And anyway, long, it's a tragic story, but I was able to put a camera outside and inside and actually really kind of gauge the consumer behavior and of the real estate agents, etc. But my best friend's mother fell and broke her hip. And that's kind of what led into, he asked me, he says, you know, will these cameras work for her? And so I went into the assisted living center, put in the cameras, then we were able to view it from his iPhone, and a very, very well-known person in the home care business saw this, and he said, you know, you really need to go to market with this. So after about the first 6 months, I developed this concept for people to be able to see their mom anywhere. And then kind of created my own server and came and went out with a kind of an IT name. And the only feedback that I got is people didn't understand my company's name. So I developed the product line Safe Insight. And then I decided to focus solely on the medical care world. And what I have done is I've created a camera system that is not only video, but it's also you're able to have a Skype-like conversation over your PC with your mother anywhere in the world. And I kind of got this concept from also the 4-hour work week, and I wanted it to be plug and play, or in this case, plug and view. And so literally I designed this concept where you can put it anywhere in the world and you can view your mom and dad from multiple locations. So if you have a sister in New York, a brother in Michigan, you both can be on the same account and interact with mom and make sure she's doing fine.
Now when you're, how does the old person feel about this?
Typically, if I were to come in before they fall, not very well. They would think it's kind of an invasion of their privacy.
Right. So then how do you move them into accepting that this is a good thing for them?
Kicking and screaming.
Really?
No. It's my customer is actually the person that's 45 to 65 and that actually is kind of taking control of care of their mom and dad.
Oh, so it's the family member.
Correct.
And so they see the value of this.
Well, they do see the value typically after their first fall. And then they realize that their mom and dad is not going to wear their alert bracelet or their pendant. And that even if they have it on, that doesn't mean necessarily they're going to push it and call for help.
Right. Now, did you see there was recently a story in the news that I read that Domino's Pizza, did you see the story? Domino's Pizza was delivering a pizza every night to this elderly person. And for 3 nights in a row, she didn't order the pizza, so they thought there was something wrong. The Domino's pizza person went over there, knocked on the door. Then they eventually got the police, opened the door, and she had fallen. And she had no way of communicating. And then this Domino's pizza person actually saved their life. And that seems a little kind of lucky, where your system seems more of a sure thing.
Well, thank you for that. And that's, I hear over and over when I talk to people who have had their mothers pass, and it is a story that is common that there doesn't matter how active you are in their lives, when you're not there is typically when problems arise. And not knowing is really one of the biggest factors of, you know, can you not get there? And then there's a guilt. And so having the video and having a non-invasive area and making sure that you really clearly know your mom and dad's behavior pattern. If you don't know it, you surely will. But being anytime, anywhere, and not being able to disturb them and making sure they're okay, really gives peace of mind.
Right, I would imagine. Now, when you're shooting the video, like, are you shooting just like the floor area? Like, what's actually on the screen?
Good question. Actually, in a typical house, let's say if it's a house that you're actually making it more accessible, or a private residence or aging in place, then I suggest about, depending on the landscape, 3 to 4 cameras. And I typically suggest if it's in the family room, it's where their favorite seat is. And that's typically where we're going to put the two-way camera so you can actually talk with them.
Right.
And then if they spend a lot of time in the kitchen, you're going to want to have one capture where you can see them eating and making sure their normal behavior. I always say in the hallway. The hallway right outside the bedroom is really key because when they get up from the bed or you can be able to see, you know, their pathway instead of actually seeing them in the bed per se.
Right.
If you insist on being in the bedroom, I suggest putting under the bed. So this way you can look at the feet and if they fall, you can see if they have fallen instead of, you know, viewing them in bed, which is, you know, in some
family.
Yeah. A little bit creepy. Yes.
Well,
exactly.
that's where you're preserving their privacy.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So there's ways to do this so that you're creating the safe environment without invading their privacy.
One more key thing with this concept that I've developed is that you have our engineers and myself included cannot see the video at all.
Right.
We have actually made it isolated where only the primary care, so the family member dictates.
Like who can have access.
Correct. And even if you were to let their grandchildren see it, you can actually bar them from seeing the primary cameras and seeing the secondary, which is in the living room. And
right. So they can choose which camera to allow access to.
Exactly.
Right. So that's an awesome service. So now, is it are you finding that people are open to this, or is this kind of too new at this point?
No, but people are very open to it.
Uh-huh.
But my business model is a little bit different. 25% of my model is retail driven, mm-hmm. and so it's more of a passive. I I really try to leverage the internet and having people come to my website as
a community. And they discover it and then they just kind of set it up themselves?
Yeah, so because it's plug-in view, and then I'll guide them step by step.
Right.
But majority of my customers are home care providers. Say they use it as a competitive advantage because it's a very competitive market. And so they will actually install this, the certified nursing assistants will install it, and then they will be able to use this as another stream of income, keeping in touch with the customer,
right.
But more importantly, offer a level of quality of care and invite the families to be able to participate in the care, which is
right.
key. Because their families are typically alienated.
So now in an assisted living, is this a place where to be? Or where is it typically?
In an assisted living independent care facility.
Right.
And it typically, if the person rents that space, then it would be a good place.
So that's like an add-on. If they want to have this service, they can have
correct.
This.
Correct.
So now if they have the service, it becomes more of this two-way Skyping, have this video chat.
If that's what they want, they can have that opportunity. I have multiple cameras.
Right.
I have a camera that actually will turn on the lamp. And be able to passively turn on the lamp so you don't, shock.
Hey, what's
yeah,
going on here?
Exactly. Create a heart attack.
Right.
So these cameras are pretty dynamic and they are digital. So it's a very new technology and, we're right on the cutting edge.
Again, I got to go back to ease the concerns of our listeners as far as the privacy issue.
You just got to just kind of control the creepy factor.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I think it's important that the listeners understand that this is not invasive. It's by no means to be invasive. So I think what you said, and you made one statement about no access, your engineers, no access to the video. And I think that's certainly important. Let's go to the assisted living arena, though. I mean, obviously, you're only placing these in their living area. I mean, you're not wiring them so that when they go out down to the dinner that you're monitoring that situation.
Right. Also, when you're in a public venue, you go through a lot of laws. It's illegal to record any audio. Wiretapping laws, especially when you're in a public place. And a lot of assisted living centers are going to actually give you some fuss about that. So you have to educate them. But if they're renting and you disclose it to the home care providers or the companion care, as long as you disclose that there's video monitoring, then everything's in the clear. But for the public space, no, because you don't have consent of everyone there.
Yeah.
So you would need consent of the primary patient.
What are some of the other, if there are other applications for this beyond this senior arena? Are there any? Have you thought about that? Or
when I first got into the business, there are about 7 different arenas, and I went wild on saying what the possibilities are, from equestrian farms to doggy daycare to you name it. There was a lot of applications to be able to be creepy.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I decided that for me to specialize into the senior care market, my goal is to be the thought leader. And there is enough opportunity for everybody in this space, but there are 10,000 people aging at 65 a day. We keep hearing the silver tsunami. And quite honestly, I am passionate about being able to assist the families on helping save the life of seniors.
I was going to, when you started that statement, I was going to ask why, and you answered it.
So I get hit with opportunities every day, and some of my competition, there are a few out there, and they're definitely going after the residential market and the daycare market, and I just don't want to be in that space. I appreciate the healthcare, and I'm a former EMT. I do like to help people, and this is my way to be able to help and also be in business to support my family as well.
Part of the issue in long-term care right now obviously revolves around cost.
Mm-hmm.
If an individual needs 8 hours a day service with a caregiver, a personal CNA caregiver, you can get this cost approaching $30,000, $40,000, maybe even $50,000 on an annual basis. That's a pretty big nut for people to digest. What impact could you have on that aspect?
Well, the impact is, because my customer is also the home care company, the impact is twofold. One part is for the home care company is to be able to expand their level of service to include the family. Because typically what I've seen is it's more of a reactionary type of reporting. So here's your mom, here's what we did, here's the challenges. However, if the primary care, the person that's responsible for the mom, is actually there with the home care company, then they can actually see, clearly get an understanding of what is involved to justify that 8 hours or is 10 hours more. And this way, too, when they're being able to help mom, I think having somebody else there is soothing.
See, I'm going to look at it in a different view.
What a surprise, Sam.
Yeah.
What a surprise.
Our challenge is keeping clients long-term, and typically if we do that, then the determining factor as to why they leave our business is 99% cost.
Right.
And that's because the number of hours per day have risen to a point that it becomes it's just very expensive. So in my view, the way I see this is that here is a way for us to provide service longer and still have monitoring in those slow down hours, i.e. in the evening or whenever it may be, and preserve the personal care for an extended period of time.
When you read blogs and you start getting into the home care space, you start seeing that the families shift to the family member that's not working, or the family member that's not working that is, you know, that is the caregiving person of the family, and there's usually about one or two people. And you suffer burnout from that family member, and you suffer economic and emotional distress. So I agree with you that I think that perhaps there could be a business out there for a home care company to be able to help out the family member that has almost been thrown into the be able to do caregiving, but does not have the credentials or the training, or you know, and maybe just needs help. Maybe needs to go out, and then the home care company can come in.
Yeah, it's a way of preserving the care. And now it might not be the personal care. But it's preserving the care for the individual, keeping them away from acute situations, i.e. Hospital stays, inpatient hospital stays, or rehab, or whatever it may be.
There's one piece, too, that in dementia and Alzheimer's, where the home care providers are often accused of stealing or mistreatment. And so the video solution is actually assurance as well, because there was one story where this home care provider was accused of stealing something that was very valuable to the family. And by reviewing the video, they were able to find that the mother put it away and they just couldn't find it.
And I've got to expand on that, because that happens. We see that all the time. We'll get calls about such and such is missing. And we don't discount those calls, but we always try to coach the individual. Let's look around and see if it shows up or if it's somewhere else. And in many cases, it is. The person, the dementia, you know, one of the typical signs of dementia is not misplacing things, but misplacing things into locations that are don't make sense, such right. as a watch in the freezer or whatever it may be.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Now, this is a fairly new company, but do you have any stories where, you know, this technology saved somebody or helped somebody?
Not yet. I have actually had a lot of stories where I should have been there. And as when I've developed this, it took me a year to develop. But I keep hearing stories over and over that keep me going. That, you know, the one story that kind of hit home is when I was, oddly enough, at a bar or at a social function, I was telling this guy just out of the blue what I do. And he and his brother actually travel quite a bit. And they keep telling their mom, you need to go into assisted living center. And she refuses. They're very stubborn. And so they left for their business trips. And their mother, after they left, actually had a stroke and laid in bed for 2 days. And these kind of stories encourage me to keep going and know that I've got to be able to, try to just tell the tale that it doesn't matter what technology you use. I prefer you to use mine, of course. However, you just need to be able to ensure that your mom's doing okay, even though she says she is. Yeah. And it's just knowing.
Do you have any stats on like how often, when you have an elderly parent, how often the children check in with them? Are there any stats on that? Is that like I talk to my dad every week. My wife talks to her mom every day. Is there kind of a ballpark of that out there?
From one parameter, I just go by my best friend, and he actually goes every morning religiously for 2 hours, brings her a cup of coffee, and sits with her and talks with her, which I know that is not normal whatsoever.
Right.
Typically, I have seen check in maybe once or twice, mm-hmm. and usually this the wife that right. will check in, you know. But, you know, unfortunately, it does vary within
right.
the families. And, you know, if they have children, then you just don't have time.
Right.
And that's such a random process. I mean, I obviously hear stories where they'll have that process set up, someone in the morning, someone in the afternoon checking in. And the problem is the individual gets in trouble at 11 a.m. Mm-hmm. and 11 a.m. and is lying in the floor till 4 p.m.
Right.
I mean,
right.
So
it's not a great scenario, but it's something.
One of the major statistics that is very serious, within 30 to 60 minutes of the person being on the floor, the senior's body starts decomposing. It starts destructing.
Right.
And so if you're not in there, and then you're going to have some serious long-term effects
right.
that they're not going to be able to recover from within about an hour, hour and a half.
Right.
And that's very serious.
So like with your system, like if I'm watching a video, I see my mom has fallen down, I can call 911.
Most certainly.
Like, and direct them to that location, I guess. Is
right.
that how it works?
And even, to tag into our business, you know, I can envision a situation where we'd have an on-call situation where if they haven't seen their mother come out of the bedroom, and they're not certain what's going on. Well, let's have someone check.
Right.
And that's a good point. You have in these cameras, you have alerts. So let's say you have it in the hallway right outside the bedroom that if
right.
you do not see movement by 8 o'clock, and that is typically her normal time, she gets
right.
up at that you can be alerted for there no activity.
Oh, so it's like kind of motion sensor?
Very much so. And so if you're not getting an alert saying, hey, activity in the hallway,
right.
then you know that something's out of the normal.
Right.
And therefore, that would spawn you next level of care saying, hey,
right.
call, check the cameras. To be able to, because again, seniors.
Can you go
are very,
back in time and rewind the camera?
It records up to 7 days of
oh, wow.
a video. So, and this is good too, that if you're in a situation that you can't be there and, you know, have a level of distrust, you can go back and see the video
right.
and on your iPhone and your computer.
What if question, and hopefully I'm not overstepping my boundaries. For those individuals that are concerned about the privacy issue, if you've got this motion sensor detecting capability, could we, in theory, could we turn the video off and just use the motion detectors as some type of monitoring system?
In theory, my cameras use the video.
Okay,
too.
All right. I know you're not there, but
right.
I'm trying again. I want to ease the issue, this issue in the minds of our listeners.
What we could do is do a laser, and it would track the person like, you know, SWAT. I'm joking.
I thought that was a great idea.
But what we could do is that it's spawned with the infrared. It actually tracks the person, so it'll turn on the video, and then that will be alerted.
Okay.
We do have calendar functions on the software where you can turn the camera off, and we're working on
it. But that defeats the purpose, turning it,
well,
unless they're on vacation or they're...
We're working on a system. I don't want to give too much away, but we're working on where literally you can turn it off. But the primary person has the ability to be able to override it and turn it on, and then to be able to check in on mom. So if the senior has a button, a toggle button, says "Do not disturb,"
right.
and which they'll often do, then it can be overridden
right.
and turned on just to make sure it's spot check.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's viable. I mean, I can see where that would be.
I would think that the senior would like this in terms of their own safety, that someone's there, you know, like no one's breaking in their house. Like, there's an element to that as well.
Yeah.
Well, it's typically after the first fall that they appreciate it.
I mean, I appreciate your statement, Lee, and you know, rational thinking would concur with what you're saying. But you and I have never been there, and my experience with all these is there is this thing about independence. There's this thing about saying, I'm not old. I don't need this.
Right.
I'm still capable of taking care of myself.
Look, we hear this of just taking the keys away. You know, I mean, that's a huge thing as well. But in this case, I would think that you can place these cameras in a way that you're not really seeing them in their day-to-day life if you wanted to, but you would see them if they had fallen and hurt themselves.
Or conversely, you wouldn't see them if they had fallen because there's no movement. I mean,
Right.
Yeah.
But there is video. I mean, there is audio. So you actually can hear them. if, let's say hypothetically, the senior is so opposed to being videoed.
Right.
So you can get the camera that has audio capabilities. So at the bare minimum, you can listen in.
Right.
And if you hear help, you know, or something, then you can actually be alerted.
Right.
I prefer video. However, in the extreme circumstance, if you know, if they're adamant, then you don't want to push that. You know, right. Again, it's about senior safety.
Yeah. great information. I know, and I'm going to try to put you, not going to try, I'm afraid I'm going to put you on the spot, Stephen. Where is this moving at a high level? Where's this moving? Because obviously in my mind, we home care providers have got to start understanding that there has to be some type of high-tech intervention here. So I mean, you've got the cameras, mm-hmm. you've got the two-way audio. What's the next step? Is there another? Can you even envision that?
I can. We've all seen the maybe we've all seen the commercials of Cisco's telemed presence. If you haven't, just watch any show and you'll see Cisco's telemed. And what the commercial was, where the doctor was in Bangladesh mm-hmm. or China and be able to see patients locally.
Right.
And I can do that. Now, that is something where you have a two-way video and you have patient interaction with, you know, a doctor that's local or regional or even
right.
far away. And I think we're getting to that process where we're all going to be connected, whether it's, video. It's expensive right now, and the barrier of entry is pretty high. It's around $4,000, and that's not really practical for a lot of seniors that are on fixed incomes.
Yeah, but no more than 20 years ago, personal PCs were pretty
right,
expensive,
exactly.
too.
So that's something to look out for. I would say from the video, it's going to be the two-way video. And right now it's one way from when it comes to the family looking into the senior. I envision a time where it's actually going to be a two-way, kind of like a telephone that would be a two-way video, or, you know, that's, I would have to see, we're going to be able to track the seniors, like almost a senior LoJack.
That's what I was thinking. Some of it GPS, and you have cell phones who are capable now, and of course the senior would have the ability to turn it off if they wanted to, mm-hmm. As long as you had the ability to override it in the case right. in the event of an emergency.
We're also working on some systems that will be able to detect the rapid rate of falling and to be able to do alert for that. And there are some.
What about like heart rate and some of the medical functions?
Now, this is one thing I am passionate about is senior citizens and high technology. There are a lot of confusing things out there, but there are devices now that will do that. And there are wireless functions that all, you know, that all track everything of a senior.
Right.
And I'm actually trying to develop a continuing education class for seniors on one part, but also care providers. Because just like any business, technology can be overwhelming.
Right.
You know, what is really the right fit?
Sure.
And so I'm actually building on that. But yes, Lee, there right. is that.
Well, right I now. Have this device. It's called a Fitbit, and it keeps track of how many steps I take every day. And when I walk by my computer, it just wirelessly connects to the computer and tracks it online.
But you're going to find the senior generation is very skeptical. And so even though we are all technically savvy and adopting of the new technology, seniors, they're just now getting on the internet, and they
right.
are yet the fastest growing segment of the internet. However, they're still very skeptical and,
right.
You know, of high technology.
Hey, listen, I'm resistance to this idea, but I also
he has a rotary cell phone.
Yeah. I also know and understand that 15 years from now, there's going to be a financial crisis in the long-term care industry as there is in acute health care. And somehow, some way, we've got to start addressing that now mm-hmm. to start lessening that that impact.
Right, and you should be able to leverage the technology. There's a lot of technology here.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Stephen, that great information, good conversation. For our listening audience that is listening to this broadcast and is going, whoa, or let's jump on this. What piece of advice, high-level piece of advice might you give to them as they wrestle with this idea?
Well, that's a good question. We went through this with my grandmother, and she was so resistant on leaving her personal residence and going into a care center. And I would have to say at the end of the day, it's very simple, but listen to her, listen to your parents. try as much as you can to respect and restore their dignity. You'll find that they'll live longer and they'll be a lot healthier. And if you do decide to stay in the house, make sure you make the home more accessible.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of features with that. And if you do decide to stay at home, just make sure that you also have their safety in mind. And if you do decide to go the camera route, then also make sure the same principle is keep their dignity and talk with them through this and why you're doing it. And let them know and reassure them that nobody can see this. And it's just communication, really, when it comes down to it.
Yeah, I almost interrupted you, and the word dignity is the key word. That's the problem, Lee, with the elders in acquiescing to this, and it has to do is they feel like their dignity is diminished because they are no longer self-sufficient. And we have to appreciate that, and contrary to what anyone might say or believe, I'm going to be there, and you're going to be there, and it's not going to be very long. So we better understand what we're asking our parents and our seniors to do. Great information. Appreciate it, Stephen. If our listeners would like to contact you, give us your contact information.
Right. My website is Safe In Sight, and that's spelled S-A-F-E, the letter N, S-I-G-H-T .com. My office number is 404-386-9099. Or email me at any time. There is tons of contact information, tons of resources, and I can be reached at Stephen with a PH at Vectra3.com, Vectra3.com, and that's the parent corporation.
We certainly appreciate it. Good information, good content.
Thank you very much, Sam. It was a pleasure meeting you, and Lee, like always, nice to see you again.
Great.
Thanks for being our guest. Well, that's it for today. We certainly appreciate Taylor in Texas and Stephen here. Good information. We want to remind our listening audience that if they'd like to listen to the rebroadcast of today's show, they can do so at eugeriaradio.com. And as always, in closing, if the youth of this nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.